This is Circulating Ideas. I'm Troy Swanson, sitting in for Steve Thomas. My guest today is Dr. Laura Saunders, Associate Professor of Library and Information Science at Simmons University. She was one of the principal investigators for the No News Symposium, which was held at Simmons this past spring.
With library budgets constantly shrinking, it's getting harder and harder to provide the resources your library patrons want and need. That's why our friends at Mometrics Test Preparation created the Mometrics e-Library. Through their e-Library portal, Mometrics offers study guides and practice questions for over 1,800 different exams covering college entrance, graduate school, nursing, medical, teacher certification, civil service, and many other careers and fields of study. All fully customizable and at a fraction of the cost of the printed books. It's like having an entire library of test prep materials all at your fingertips. So save space, save paper, and save money with Mometrics e-Library. To learn more, visit goelibrary.com. That's goelibrary.com.
Laura, welcome to the show, and thanks for talking to me.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
You know, I wanted to talk to you as part of my ongoing series on fake news and libraries. First off, I'm a big fan of your research and your writing, so that's a good reason to talk. But also, I'm excited because I was happy to be a participant at the No News Symposium, and I thought this would be worth sharing with listeners, and so I'm glad we got a chance to sit down and talk.
Great, thank you.
So to get us started, could you talk about the No News Symposium, and that's No, K-N-O-W. What was it, and where did it come from?
Yes. So the No News Symposium, it was a weekend symposium, a two-day weekend symposium that we held here at Simmons in April. And it brought together 80 people, mostly librarians and journalists, but also some educators and some people broadly from computer science and the tech sector. And the idea was to try and get some cross-disciplinary perspectives on how we can respond to the challenges of fake news and mis- and disinformation. Since all of these fields, you know, libraries, education, journalism, and the tech industry are all really being impacted by fake news in different ways. And the idea for this, or some of the motivation came out of the fact that I taught a media literacy class for undergrads here at Simmons for a couple of years, and we had a journalism professor, Rachel Gans-Boriskin, who came in to guest lecture in the class, and she was fantastic. And I would listen to her talking about some of the ethics and the principles of journalism, and I kept thinking that I heard a lot of connections between what journalists were concerned with and what they valued and what we are concerned with and what we value in library science. So after her guest lecture, I reached out to her, and we were sort of just brainstorming about different ways that we might be able to work together and collaborate. But this was a few years ago that we first started talking. And at the time, we didn't have a real solid idea of what we could do. We just knew that we wanted to work together. And then around the time of the 2016 election, when the whole, you know, the term fake news really took off and people started talking more in the mainstream about what this was and what we could do about it, that was where we really saw our opportunity. So I reached out to Rachel again, and we decided, yes, we wanted to do something about this, and we were going to work on a grant proposal. And then we also reached out to Lisa Hinchcliffe at University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She is someone that I had been working with, collaborating with on and off for a couple of years, mostly in the social justice and information literacy. I knew this was a topic she would be interested in. I really love working with Lisa because I think we do have some of the same interests. And I also love the fact that where Rachel and I are both faculty members, Lisa brought a practitioner perspective as well. So the three of us were co-PIs, and we wrote a grant through IMLS to fund the symposium, and that was what enabled us to bring 80 people to campus for this discussion.
And it was fantastic to see everybody. Let's talk a little bit about what kind of values and perspectives are shared. I mean, you kind of mentioned that you heard like echoes from Rachel of how librarians and journalists could connect. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes, definitely. So there were a few things, you know, both, of course, both journalists and librarians are guided by codes of ethics, and we're both really fields are really concerned with quality of information and accuracy of information. And there was a lot of discussion in both fields about what is authoritative information and how do we signal to people what is authoritative information? Because I think that's one of the major concerns right now when we talk about fake news and misinformation is the idea that most people certainly are aware that there's fake news out there. But I think the concern for a lot of people is trying to tease out what is fake and what isn't, what is good information and what is poor information. And this has been the case for a long time, but I think it's come a little bit to a crisis point now. So one of the things that we talked about quite a bit, even just among the three co-PIs before we even got to the symposium, was this question of how do we define authoritative information in our respective fields, and then how do we signal to our users what we believe is authoritative information? How do we help them understand? So I think that's something that sort of crosses these different fields. And of course, you know, the tech industry is obviously really interested in this as well, as they're trying to, you know, they're struggling with trying to figure out, especially within social media platforms, how do they identify themselves what is fake news? How do they deal with what they have identified as fake news? And how do they, what is their responsibility in terms of how that is shared or not shared with their users? So authority is a huge topic. But some other things that came up as sort of shared concerns or values within the symposium discussions was also this idea of building trust. You know, one of the things that we also know is that there's been sort of a crisis of trust across different civic institutions in the United States. So we've seen a lot of decline in trust in the media. And, you know, I do want to note that it seems to be a little bit different if you tease out like what we mean by the media, and if we separate sort of your traditional journalistic sources like the New York Times or something like that from broader definitions of the media. Some of the more recent polls suggest that trust in journalism is actually going up, whereas trust in media overall is declining. But regardless, the public trust in the media is not terribly high right now. Certainly trust in government is not high. The one place where there does seem to be some pretty high levels of public trust is within libraries. And so a lot of the discussion centered on this question of trust and how do people decide what to trust? How do we build trust in our institutions and in our brands? And how can we sort of, if we were able to work together, how could we maybe leverage the trust that libraries have in order to try and reach out to some of the users and the audience in some of these other fields? A few other things that were sort of common concerns, definitely there was a focus, I think, across all of the fields on connecting people with information, but there was also a strong bent towards education. And I mean, some of this certainly might have been who was in the room, but I do think that across all of the fields, there was a sense that we have some responsibility to try and help people learn, help them learn how to evaluate information, how to use information, how to use the tools to access information. And then finally, I think one other big concern that was really common across the different fields was just creating a space for civic and civil discourse. You know, there's certainly been a lot of discussion on that topic in the media and sort of in the broader space. But I think there was a lot of concern that part of the problem is not just that there's fake news or that there's misinformation, but that there's such enmity between people when they, you know, when views clash or when people disagree on the facts, that we can't necessarily even get to a point where we can talk about the common problem because we haven't even agreed on what the basic facts are. And so I think there was a lot of concern and discussion about how might we be able to create some space for more discourse.
The ability to find compromise can't exist if both sides are so polarized and distrusting of each other.
Right, exactly.
And where does that
exactly.
come from? I remember one of the, it was a humorous comment, but it also really poignant, and you probably can remember exactly who said it, but one of the journalists said, "You librarians are so well regarded. Why do you want to hang out with us at all?"
Right. In fact, that comment, somebody ended up putting it on Twitter, and that was one of the comments from the symposium that probably got the most traction. I think the person who said it, you know, he was being a little bit provocative, but I think he was also serious that, you know, it's sort of like, would this taint our brand or something like that? But I think that it was a really legitimate question, and I think the feeling in the room, the sense that I got, and I'd be interested to see if you got the same sense, was that there was really a feeling that, no, this isn't even an option. Like, we want to work together. We have to work together because we really are trying to accomplish the same goals and in a lot of cases trying to reach the same people. And if we're doing it together, it's going to be that much more, hopefully, like that much more robust and effective.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think at some level there was a mutual admiration society going on.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think librarians really do hold journalists in high regard and see the work mm-hmm. they do and appreciate the work they do. And that, you know, they're out on the front lines really writing and thinking and engaging. And I think we get it, you know, and why yeah. it's important.
Yeah. And, you know, I think I do feel like there was some outcome from the symposium as far as just raising some awareness about the different fields. Because I think one issue that I think we have in libraries, people like us, you know, I just said we have high public trust and we tend to do really well in, you know, in polling and in surveys, people tend to like us. But there's also a sense that they don't necessarily really know in too much depth what it is we do and what kinds of services we could offer and things like that. And so after the symposium, I actually got some emails. I got an email from one of the journalists who it was in the area, in the Boston area, and she said that they were hiring a new, I think it was like a deputy director. She worked at a cable news station, and she said they were hiring a director, and she wanted to open the search up to include librarians, you know, that the symposium had really made her think about what a librarian could bring Wow. to the job. And then one of the journalism or communication faculty members emailed me afterwards to just say that she was reaching out to the librarians on her campus when she got back and she really wanted to start bringing them into her classroom more. So I feel like it, you know, that there were some outcomes to that conversation that I think were really positive.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the great outcomes, I think, was this conversation of libraries as living laboratories yes. in quotes, right? And that the participants, you know, we created proposals that kind of respond to these challenges of misinformation. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could explain a little bit what was meant by living laboratories and share some of the proposal ideas.
Sure. Yeah, so the idea of living laboratories, and I really want to give credit to Lisa Hinchliffe because that she really came up with that term, and it ended up being really sort of a hinge that we used throughout the rest of the planning for the symposium. But the idea was, you know, this was an IMLS grant, so it really was meant to center libraries, and it was building on this strategic direction that IMLS had of librarians as community anchors. So we were really trying to kind of build on that theme and think of ways in which libraries could be sort of a center. And you know, getting back to that idea that we already have some high levels of trust and appreciation, so really trying to leverage that. And so the idea of using the library as a living laboratory was really thinking about developing responses, developing solutions or ideas around responding to fake news and misinformation that could use the library as a physical or a virtual space or a platform. So it didn't necessarily mean that the library had to be the main and certainly not the only component of the solution, but the idea was to really try and use the resources that the library has and to build on the community reach that they have in order to implement ideas that would hopefully have broader reach if we were working through the library and building on the resources and the trust that the library already has. But while we were centering libraries in that way, we really wanted the ideas themselves to be sort of cross-disciplinary and to bring in the expertise and the resources and the values of all of the different fields.
Mm-hmm. And so then what are the next steps following the symposium?
So there's a few things that are happening now. First of all, the symposium itself, we ended up with 9 sort of mini proposals. So as you probably remember, part of what we did throughout the second day is we had tables set up with that were sort of purposely put together with people from different fields, different disciplines at each table. And each of the tables came up with a proposal for some sort of a response to misinformation, fake news that you sort of built on this idea of libraries as living laboratories. So I don't necessarily want to try and outline all of them because mm-hmm. it's kind of a lot, but a couple that really stood out, I think. One was called To Be Honest. This was actually one of the ones that got, you know, we asked people to kind of vote on what they thought was a real idea with some traction. And this was one that a lot of people liked. And the idea there was to build sort of like newsmaker spaces for teens and to collaborate between libraries and either like, you know, your cable access television stations or other kinds of news outlets where we could teach teens how to tell their stories using media and using tools in the library. You know, it was really, I think that idea was really building on, you know, some of the sort of, I think, impact that we were all feeling at the time from the survivors of the Parkland shooting and how those teens were just really, you know, they were really making an impact. And so how could we sort of build on that and reach other teens and other places? And another sort of similar idea was a newsmaker space that would be centered in academic libraries where it would be training undergraduates to create and share news. And again, you know, using both librarians and journalists to teach them both the tools and the story making process and things like that. Another one that I think was a little bit more public library centered was called hashtag check it out. And the idea there was to essentially create a news vetting service. So it would really kind of build on something that libraries already do, which is answering people's questions. But the idea was to pull together both librarians and journalists and focus on, with some focus on local news stories. So people could submit a question to their library asking, you know, okay, I saw this news story or I heard this, you know, this perspective and I want to find out more about it and I want to find out, you know, how can I tell if this is true, and have the librarians and the journalists work together to vet the story, but also in addition to just, you know, so it's sort of like a Snopes type model where they would be able to say, like, you know, yes, here are the facts around this story, but it would also delve into a little bit of the background of how that story might have been sort of created and giving people the criteria and the steps that the librarians and the journalists went through to vet the story so that it would have an educational component to it as well. So those were just a couple of the ideas that came out of it. And so some of our next steps, one is to actually try and see if it would be possible to implement some of these ideas. So there's actually the Rita Allen Foundation had a call for proposals for misinformation solutions. And so the three of us, Lisa, Rachel, and I, along with Mary Minow, who was one of the people who had actually started to develop this check it out proposal idea even before the symposium, we put together a proposal based on the check it out idea, and we submitted that back in May. So we're still waiting to hear back from that. But if that grant is funded, it would be enough for us to do a pilot project, probably here in the Boston area. And we've reached out to a couple of libraries that might be interested in where we could really implement that project on a small scale, but with an idea of how to scale it up and how to let it, you know, let other libraries participate if they were interested. In addition to that, we are also developing another IMLS proposal that we'll submit in September that would allow us to sort of build on some of the ideas that came up in the symposium. And so those are sort of bigger, sort of more project implementation ideas. But what we'd also like to do is try to find some ways to keep some of the momentum and some of the networking connections from the symposium going. So we are in the process of developing or launching a Twitter chat that would be focused on some of the outcomes from the symposium and inviting all of the participants. And then about, I think, 45 or so of the symposium participants said that they would be interested in participating in a Facebook group. So we're going to launch that probably in the fall as well. So those are some of the steps that we're taking. And then, of course, part of it is also just disseminating information. So we've written the white paper, and of course you've seen that, and that's posted on our website. We also presented at the LOEX conference back in May, and we will be presenting at ESSEL, the European Council on Information Literacy, in September. And we've got a couple of other conference proposals out. So we're hoping to kind of just take the message to a few different venues and see if we can get more people interested.
What's the web URL while you mentioned it?
Yes, it's a little bit unusual, but it is www.sliss.simmons.edu/blogs/disinformation.
Okay, and if they Googled No News Symposium with a K, they would find it.
Yes, they would find it, yes.
That's great. Well, since we're talking, the main focus was the No News Symposium, but I would really be remiss if I didn't ask you about some of your other research. It sounds like you're quite busy with this, but I know you write and cover all kinds of areas. So is there anything that you'd like to talk about or show off that's outside of this?
Sure. Well, actually, one thing that's been kind of interesting and that started as a separate project, but there's been some interesting overlaps. So last spring, that would be 2017, we were doing a curriculum review here at Simmons in SLIS. And one of the things we were trying to do is just reassess our core curriculum and get a better sense of whether or not we were really covering the areas that were important to employers right now. So we decided to launch a survey, and it initially started as a little bit more of a sort of local geographic survey. So we sent it out to, well, we sent it to all Simmons alums, but then we also sent it to a bunch of area listservs, you know, public library directors at the Massachusetts Library Association and so on. And we got actually over 1,000 responses just from that. And what we were doing is the survey listed 53 knowledge, skill, and ability areas, and we asked the respondents to rate them as core, meaning it was something that they believed everybody should have some grounding in, regardless of what type of library they might end up working in or what type of position, or very important, meaning they felt like, you know, this is something that almost everybody will run into, but it's not necessarily core. And then the last option was specialized, meaning, you know, you would really only need to know this if you were in a very particular area of the field. Mm-hmm. And it was just very interesting to see the kinds of responses we were getting. And then our dean at the time, Eileen Abels, she was working on a grant project with Linda Smith from Illinois and Lynn Howarth from Toronto. So they decided to re-administer the survey in their schools, and then a couple of other places joined in. So at this point, we're up to, I think, 4 schools have administered the survey, and we've got over 2,500 responses.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, it's really interesting to just kind of see what people are saying they think is core to the field right now. And like I said, it started as a completely separate thing from the No News Symposium, but I am starting to see some overlaps in terms of what people are saying is important. You know, a couple of the things that are coming up in the survey are cultural competence, ability to work with, you know, with diverse communities, reflective practice grounded in diversity. You know, a lot of the things that I think were concerns and values that were brought up at the symposium. So it's going to be really interesting to delve into that data a little bit more.
That's great to hear. I sometimes worry that our library schools become punching bags for other professions sometimes.
Right.
Because, you know, there's always the running joke, oh, I never learned that in library school. But I think we all know there's only so much you can learn in a master's degree program. And when I talk to deans of library schools and faculty members, I'm always amazed at how aware they are and how much work they're doing to evolve their curriculum. and try to keep up as best as possible. And I think that's a challenge in the information landscape that we live in.
Yes, yes, it is. But I agree. I mean, I think it's so important. I mean, this is a professional degree. And so really, we want to be sure that we're preparing people, you know, our emerging professionals, to be ready for what they're going to meet when they're out in the field. And I think, you know, we can always do more to make sure that we're connected with the field, that we're connected with practitioners, and that we're really understanding what's happening in the field now, and sort of as much as possible, kind of thinking ahead to what are people going to need in the next couple of years.
So as you're working through this curriculum change, I am always thinking about how we teach, especially information literacy, because that's my main background. And I worry, you know, like that we've done so much work working with students, and just in society, that we're so skeptical, kind of, you know, some of the things you mentioned out of the symposium, that we're skeptical of information, especially things that maybe conflict with our worldview. And I wanted to ask, while I had you, how do you see information literacy playing into that? How should we, as instruction librarians, change what we do? Like, how do we give them something to believe in, maybe, is the right answer? And what is the role of information literacy in that conversation?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And as you know, information literacy is really my area of focus as well. So, you know, maybe this is my bias coming through, but I really do think that information literacy and sort of, you know, just educating people in how to access, evaluate, and use information really is key. And of course, you know, libraries, I think, have a really great role to play there. But I think that, you know, we've recognized, and I think, you know, the public at large has recognized, that we're just, you know, we're overwhelmed with the amount of information. We know that people can, anyone can create any kind of information. They can target information to the people they know are going to be receptive. So I think the only way, or maybe not the only way, but I think one of the most important ways that we can challenge fake news and misinformation is to sort of individually be as knowledgeable and as skillful and as reflective as possible. So I think we want people to learn those skills. I think they need to learn those skills. I do think, though, that what you pointed out, you know, sort of this age of skepticism is another important challenge, because we know that people aren't necessarily going to change their minds just because they're confronted with new facts, even if those facts are better and more accurate than what they had heard before. So I think one challenge for us as librarians is to really reach into that world of psychology and really start to learn more about how people, you know, cognitively process information and what some of their biases are and things like that, so that when we're teaching information literacy, we can adapt in order to meet people where they are, and we can understand that we can't necessarily just present them with, you know, here's the best information, you know, or here are the criteria for evaluating information, because they're not necessarily always all going to be receptive to that. And so we may need to be able to talk to them in a different way about what they're seeing, what they're thinking about, and you know, even how it's making them feel.
Right. Yeah, that the affect is important, right? Like, how do they understand where they are? Are they reflecting on their own worldview? Because that's their filter to everything that's going to come to them.
Exactly.
So, well, Laura, thank you for your time today. If listeners wanted to connect with you and find out more about your research, how can they do that?
Sure. One of the easiest ways is to just email me at laura.saunders@simmons.edu. But you can also find me on Twitter at BiblioLaura, and I'm also on Facebook.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for your work and your leadership and your time today.
Thank you so much.
Circulating Ideas is produced by Steve Thomas in the suburbs of Atlanta. Views expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect those of my place of work or the place of work of guests. For past interviews, visit CirculatingIdeas.com and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Overcast, or your podcast app of choice. And help others find the show by leaving a rating or review. You can follow the show on Twitter at CircIdeas or like the show's Facebook page. Music is by Pamela Klicka. Thank you for listening, and keep circulating your ideas. Save space, save paper, and save money with Mometrics eLibrary. To learn more, visit goelibrary.com. That's goelibrary.com.